This is a People First Radio podcast.
Practicing psychotherapist and City University in Canada adjunct professor Larry Green spoke about the human obsession with achievement and the denial of death during a conference called The End of Life, Dying, Suicide, Death. Simon Fraser University's Institute for the Humanities hosted the conference in November 2016 to provide space for pondering the complex and agonizing decisions regarding the end of life. Green's presentation drew on the work of the American cultural anthropologist Ernest Becker. Here are Larry Green's complete remarks from the End of Life conference.
Good to be here. Good to be with you. I appreciate the morning has been a very full one. The word that came to me as I listened to some of the discussions, especially the discussion by the rabbi, was the word awe. Because I think whenever we talk about death, awe is never far away. In a way, the experience of death beggars words. Words never are adequate for the experience that we're trying to wrap our minds around, but it's the only tool we have. I also want to quote something inaccurately from Harper's Magazine. They have this great feature called the Harper's Index where they give statistics. And doing my best recall this one stat that said, if you're homophobic, your lifespan is on average 4.5 years shorter than somebody who's non-homophobic. If you're gay and you're living in a homophobic community, your lifespan is about 12 years shorter than the average lifespan. So you can see this brings home what Robert was talking about, that your marginal status and death are very closely related. As you can see by the opening slide, I'm quoting another academic, a Nobel Prize winner. I think he's got a little bit wrong, though. He said that when he was a young man. Here's my preferred updated version. We're always busy being born and we're busy dying at the same time. It's not one or the other. We're negotiating between those two things. So here's what my focus is going to be this morning. I want to understand and talk about and hopefully get into a discussion with you about what our awareness of our imminent death, how that affects the way we live. That's what I'm interested in. Can we live with that awareness fully without being overwhelmed by it? So as Ernest Becker, somebody referred to Ernest Becker earlier, he wrote, his most famous book was called The Denial of Death. And he said in that he makes the point that we are the only creature that's aware of its own impending demise. We're aware of that as soon as we hear the word death, as soon as we see Charlotte's Web on TV, the cartoon, we become aware that we will ultimately die. So I'm going to segue from that to Krishnamurti. And Krishnamurti said that, is a leaf afraid of dying as it falls to the ground? Is a bird afraid of dying as it flies through the air? I don't think so. I've never been a bird and I've never been a leaf, so I'm not absolutely sure about that. But my guess is that they're not as aware as I am or as aware as you are. And why is that the case? I think it's the case because the gift or curse of our intelligence allows us to live in a symbolic as well as a physical universe. We have language. Because we have language, we can talk about death. So we can bring death from some vague future into the present, symbolically. That's what our curse or our gift is. So we can bring it into the future. A bird also doesn't have a nameable self. It doesn't have a symbol for itself. I have a symbol for Larry Green. I have a symbol for the future. In this vague future that I can anticipate, my nameable self is going to die. Animals don't have that. They follow their nose. When death arrives, it's a big surprise. I think that nameable self that I'm referring to can also be called the ego. So when I'm referring to myself, I'm usually talking about my ego. And my ego, the way I describe my ego is just a set of protocols that I have. If this happens, then I will do that. So I've accumulated all these survival rules and protocols over my whole life, and that's me. That's what I identify with. I think that's not the whole story. I should be identifying with my whole being, my embodied self, my unconscious self, not just my speaking, talking ego. My ego's job is to ensure my survival. That's what its job is. That's what its function is. Keep me going, keep me going, keep me going. It doesn't put any limits on that, though. The ego doesn't put any limits on that survival project. It wants to be immortal. So I'm going to quote Krishnamurti again. There is a preoccupation with death because we are afraid to lose the known. All those rules that we've learned over our lives, all those meanings that we use to navigate successfully, we're afraid to lose the known that we've accumulated, the things that we have gathered. This is the quote I love. He says, "The unknown cannot be perceived by the known. The unknown cannot be perceived by the known. But the mind, or ego as I prefer to call it, being made of the known, realizes I'm going to end. And therefore it is frightened. We are frightened of the unknown." So now I'm going to tie this all together a little bit later, but now I'm going to segue to Milan Kundera, an author I enjoy a lot. And he makes the startling claim that we are all babies when it comes to the aging process. It's kind of a nice paradox that he's putting together there. As we age, we're learning that our body doesn't work like it used to, and we're learning that our mind doesn't work like it used to. And how does it work? Again, we're learning, we have to learn new things, and we're vulnerable. We're vulnerable just as a baby is helpless. The older we get, we get to re-enter that helplessness. I couldn't help but, as I was listening to Robert's story about people in these care facilities, how vulnerable they are, how little protection they have. So we're all babies when it comes to aging.
This is People First Radio. I'm Kevin. Practicing psychotherapist and City University in Canada adjunct professor Larry Green spoke about the human obsession with achievement and the denial of death during a conference called The End of Life, Dying, Suicide, Death. Simon Fraser University's Institute for the Humanities hosted the conference in November 2016 to provide space for pondering the complex and agonizing decisions regarding the end of life. Here's more from Larry Green.
I don't think we don't have to wait to be old, or we don't have to remember being young to remember what it feels like to be helpless. I think we get those opportunities almost on a daily basis. So my talk originally was called Intimations of Mortality, Previews of the End. I think that feeling of helplessness is a taste. It's like an appetizer. It's an appetizer for death. This is what we're going to experience, fill the whole screen. So we can start practicing that. We can start rehearsing that. And I'm reminded of a client that I saw yesterday. She's diabetic, and she was taking her parents down for a visit across the border, and she was going into the precursors to an insulin shock. So she was becoming disorientated, and she was speeding, and a police car pulled her over for speeding, and she started to explain that she thought she was going into insulin shock, and the officer said, "That's not going to help your case." Very sympathetic response. So she gave up in expecting any help from him. But what she reported is she didn't know what to do with her parents. She didn't know what to retrieve from the car. She was completely confused. She was in a state of helplessness. But I don't, again, just to reiterate, I don't think you need to be diabetic and insulin shocked to have that experience of helplessness and to be confused about what to do next. I want to make the same point that was earlier made by the Buddhist nun, that we don't know what's going to happen to us after we die, but we really don't know what's going to happen in the next minute either. Every future is an unknown. So here's a cartoon that demonstrates that. Here we are, the end of the sidewalk. Here's what that cartoon means to me. I think that I'm always laying down paving stones into the future. I've always got my little plans. This is what I'll do next, then I'll do that, and then I'll do that. In a way, I'm building a future that will be hospitable to me when I arrive there. I'm always trying to ensure my existence with imagining that. But the future is actually a void. All my plans are just simply there in my head. They may give me comfort, but it's an illusion that I'm actually constructing a future. So I have to somehow come to terms with that. So I'm going to give a couple of examples of that. I have a psychotherapist friend who spoke at the Ernest Becker conference, and when he thought of his own death, he said, "Oh my God, I won't have any more projects." We love our projects. I certainly love mine. When I'm waiting at the door to go out for the evening with my partner, and she's taking a little bit more time than I am taking, I'm looking for ways to fill that gap, that hole, right? I'm in a moment of helplessness. I have another friend who took his son hiking up Black Tusk and had a moment of panic when he got up there because he realized he hadn't packed any reading material. So he wouldn't have anything to do to make that transition from wakefulness to sleep. I'm going to quote another pop singer, Mark Knopfler, who used to sing with Dire Straits and now has a solo career. And here's a lyric from a song of his. He said, duck under the eaves of the bothy, to sit here caged by rain, somewhere to go conjure a next move when I have to think again. So I didn't know what a bothy was, so I used my old friend, the internet. There's the words. There's a bothy. It's a temporary shelter that anybody can take shelter in. But I think of that shelter, those stones that are used to make that shelter, I think they're the metaphorical equivalents to the meanings that we surround ourselves with. Our soul is a very delicate, fragile, vulnerable thing, and we protect it with meanings and with plans and with expectations. That acts as kind of an insulation from being impinged on by life directly, like that bothy. That's a place I can take shelter. Those meanings that I use to protect myself or that you use to protect yourself are concepts that have solidified. Life isn't solid. Life is always flowing. It's always out of our control. Our concepts, because they're static, seem to be in our control, and we get some comfort from that. See, without that stone shelter or that conceptual shelter around us, we're naked. As King Lear, as Shakespeare demonstrated that in King Lear. When we lose those meanings, the upside of that is we are directly in touch with existence. We are directly in touch with life, directly in touch with death. We have no insulation around this. So I'm going to tell you another little story. It's from a book called Jacob the Baker, and it goes like this. Imagine a boy sitting on a hill, looking out through his innocence on the beauty of the world. Slowly the child begins to learn. He does this by collecting small stones of knowledge, placing one on top of the other. Over time, his learning becomes a wall he has built in front of himself. Now, when he looks out, he can see his learning, but he has lost his view. Yeah. This makes the man who was once the boy both proud and sad. The man, looking at his predicament, decides to take down the wall. But to take down the wall also takes time. And when he has accomplished this task, he has become an old man. The old man rests on the hill and looks out through his experience on the beauty of the world. I don't think we have to wait that long.
This is People First Radio. I'm Kevin. Practicing psychotherapist and City University in Canada adjunct professor Larry Green spoke about the human obsession with achievement and the denial of death during a conference called The End of Life, Dying, Suicide, Death. Simon Fraser University's Institute for the Humanities hosted the conference in November 2016 to provide space for pondering the complex and agonizing decisions regarding the end of life. Here are the rest of Larry Green's comments at Simon Fraser University's The End of Life Conference.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about Becker now. Yeah. What are those stones made of that we surround ourselves with? Becker says that the way we manage our terror about death is by adhering to culturally constructed beliefs about reality. We protect ourselves from our terror by becoming loyal to the culturally constructed meanings about reality. And those meanings provide a sense that we are a person of value. I'm okay. The world's a good place to be. And the world has meaning. So I'm going to talk a little bit about one of Trump's supporters who's interviewed both by Fox and CNN. This man had worked for the Carrier air conditioning factory, and he was making $58 an hour. He had worked there for 20 years, and his wife worked for the same company. She was making $35 an hour. They had a good life. They had a nice home. And then Carrier moved their factory to another country, and he was unemployed, and he's been unemployed for 6 years now. His wife is working in a restaurant at $18 an hour. So I don't think that family feels like they are people of value anymore. I think they've lost their culturally constructed value. They, in a way, they are outside of the bothy that I was showing you earlier. Those stones are not protecting them anymore. And that's why they're so vulnerable to being manipulated as well, because it's a terrifying place to be. So marginalized people are also like that. When we profess loyalty to our culturally constructed meanings, it's like running in the middle of the herd where the predators are on the edges of the herd. I'm not going to get picked off. I'm in the middle of the herd. I'm okay. It's people running on the edges of the herd. The margins, on the margins, they are aware of mortality, as Robert was pointing out so eloquently. A black man living in the United States is very aware of mortality. It's not an abstraction for them. Okay, another thing that I can say is that to give you a sense of what it's like to live without those stones, without those concepts that we surround ourselves with, culture shock. If you've ever been in another culture that you're driving on the wrong side of the road and all those habits that you've accumulated that work very well in Canada don't work at all there, you start to feel quite naked. Yeah. So how am I going to end here? I'm going to end with another little story. I was listening to Margaret McMillan, the Massey lecture. She gave a very interesting talk about the consequences of living with our culturally constructed meanings. She talked about the Junker class. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right, in Germany. The Junker class, the men were raised to be courageous, self-sacrificing, willing to die, willing to fight. That was the whole tradition of that caste of people. When the Russians invaded Germany and took over parts of Germany, those men didn't know what to do. They were completely at sea because they didn't have any ways of coping with that. The women, on the other hand, learned how to lie, how to steal forage for turnips in the field. So this one woman, she was on the East Germany side, and she worked her way to the American side. She escaped. Then she went back and started bringing her family back. The last person she went for was her stepfather, who was in a prisoner of war camp, and he was a Junker. And she talked to him through the fence and said, "I can get you out of here. I've got 2 tickets to the West. Come with me." "No, I can't do that. A German soldier does not retreat. This is my place. This is where I belong." And she said, "Oh, okay. Gee, I'm not sure how to catch that train. I'm not sure which car to get on. Okay, I'll help you." So she appealed to his culturally constructed meanings to get him out of that situation.
Dr. Larry Green is a practicing psychotherapist and an adjunct professor at City University Canada in Vancouver. Dr. Green's presentation, titled "Intimations of Mortality, Previews of the End," was delivered at a Simon Fraser University Institute for the Humanities conference in November 2016.
People First Radio is a community media project of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast partners. Listen to our podcasts online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpages.